You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 9th, 2017. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy. We're going to be talking about Fantastic Beasts sequel casting, Disneyland's plans for a Spider-Man ride, Pacific Rim Uprising trailer, Disney's plans to produce original content for their streaming service, a Fast and the Furious spinoff, and in the mailbag, we'll continue our discussion about spoilers, this time about trailers that gave away big reveals. On today's podcast, joining me are Huaitran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
This is definitely not the second time we're recording this. Insert banter here that we've already recorded because of my mess up, and into the news. Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn has always made himself available on Twitter, and recently someone asked if the characters in Guardians of the Galaxy are actually speaking English, and he actually said that they are not speaking English, that it is being translated to English for our viewing pleasure. Chris, you wrote the story for SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
Right. So, like you said, people have asked James Gunn this question on Twitter before, and he's actually answered in the past. But according to him, the characters in the film have translator implants in their necks that basically translate all the various alien languages, which explains why it sounds like everyone, you know, out there in the galaxy is speaking English, but they're not really. It's the translator working for them. And in the first film, there's actually a hint of this. In the first Guardians of the Galaxy, during the lineup scene with the character of Peter Quill, there's a bunch of text on the screen in his lineup. And at the very bottom of the screen, it says translator implant in neck. So it was revealed all the way back in the first film, if you, I guess, like eagle-eyed viewers could catch it.
I've watched this movie many times and have never noticed that. I wonder what this means for Infinity War, because the Guardians are going to come in contact with our Earth set Avengers. Will they explain the translation on screen, or is that just something that they don't even need to get into?
I doubt they'll explain it on screen, but James Gunn's answer is that the translators work both ways. So in his words, it says, if they're talking with someone who speaks French, they can both understand and speak French because of the translator. So basically, it translates other people's languages for them, and then it translates their language into whatever language the person they're speaking to speaks, if that makes any sense.
You know, I appreciate that James Gunn has thought about this. He has put the thought in time and effort to come up with a reasoning for this, despite how crazy or insane it is. Moving on, there has been some Fantastic Beasts sequel casting. HT, you wrote this article for SlashFilm.com, including a figure that we have heard about in the Harry Potter books.
So Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them just released a bunch of new casting announcements for the sequel, and one of which includes former Daily Show correspondent Jessica Williams, who recently starred in her own Netflix series, or Netflix film, The Incredible Jessica James. So she's starting to try out the acting world. And she will be playing an undisclosed character, but we've also learned about other new and sort of familiar characters who will be coming into Fantastic Beasts 2. They include Brontës Jodorowsky as Nicholas Flamel, who is a familiar character that we heard of in the first Harry Potter film, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or the Philosopher's Stone in the UK version. So Nicholas Flamel is a very renowned figure who we've never seen on screen, but we'll be seeing him for the first time as a sort of young and strapping wizard, young for, I guess, a 500-year-old, because he is the only known maker of the Philosopher's Stone, which extends his own life. By the time Harry Potter comes around, he is 690 years old. So in Fantastic Beasts, which takes place about 100 years before, well, not 100, but like 70 years before Harry Potter, he will be 620. And he is an old friend of Albus Dumbledore, and it's also implied that he was a partner of Dumbledore at one point. So we may see some of that play out with the young Dumbledore played by Jude Law. Other casting includes characters that we've never heard of called Spielman, Bunty, Torquil Travers, Rosary, Arnold Guzman, and a few more unnamed characters. So that is really exciting. It's some very Harry Potter-esque names. And yeah, I'm excited to see who Jessica Williams plays. She doesn't have a character synopsis yet, or who she'll be playing, but seeing her star rise is very exciting.
I have not seen her film. I know it debuted at Sundance this year, where I think Netflix bought it. Have either of you seen the film?
I saw it. It was okay.
Really? At Sundance, it was like the thing that everybody was talking about. It was like one of the top five big buzz films.
I don't know. It didn't make much of an impact upon me when I watched it. It kind of felt very much in line with that sort of meandering millennial subgenre of film that Netflix has really taken to. It kind of felt like an elongated episode of Master of None, if that makes sense. It was well written and well acted, but it didn't really leave a lasting impact on me after I watched it.
Interesting. So maybe I don't have to check it out. It was on my list, but those are not praising words for that film. Disney has been trying to bring Marvel to their theme parks for quite some time. There is a contract preventing them from bringing Marvel characters to the Orlando parks, or some of the Marvel characters. They have announced a Guardians of the Galaxy ride coming to Epcot. They have previously announced that Marvel is going to have they have put a Guardians of the Galaxy attraction in Disney's California Adventure, and that is the first of a bunch of stuff, Marvel, that is planned to come to California Adventure, but they have not announced what it is. Now that a new patent gives us a clue of what might be coming to Disneyland, Chris, you wrote this article for SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
Right. So according to this patent, it's for something called a track-based swing ride with long arm pendulum, which doesn't sound that exciting. But apparently it's supposed to simulate the experience of basically swinging from either tree to tree, or swinging from perhaps a web of Spider-Man. The patent lists either it could be emulating Tarzan, obviously swinging from tree to tree, or also Spider-Man swinging between skyscrapers.
Let's try to describe what this is. The drawing, which you can see on slashfilm.com, is kind of like these people in a ride vehicle that are held from above by a pendulum. So if you've ever seen a pendulum that can swing side to side, back and front, in any direction, it's basically you are the pendulum, and you are being moved like a roller coaster through a dark ride.
It looks like a ski lift that basically spins in a complete circle.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty crazy concept. I'm surprised that no one's ever done this before. Okay, so I'm guessing that people are speculating that this could be used to swing through the skyscrapers of Manhattan as Spider-Man, right?
Right, exactly. And again, it says, you know, like in the patent, it mentions both Tarzan and Spider-Man. And like you said, which I didn't realize this, but I didn't realize that Disney didn't have the rights to the Marvel character Rise like this. So if the patent doesn't work out, they could always just turn it into a Tarzan thing because they have the rights to that from the Disney Tarzan film.
Yeah. I mean, they could also do Jungle Book or something like that as well. I'm sure
right,
they can use it. They'll find a place to use it somewhere. But it's exciting because I'm a Marvel fan. I'm a Disneyland fanatic. I'm an annual pass holder, and I want to see more Marvel in the parks. And a ride like this seems unlike anything I've seen at Universal or any of the other theme parks. So I'm excited to see this actually happen, if it ever happens. You don't know. They file patents all the time that, you know, never come to fruition. But we'll have to see. Also in the news with Disney is we've talked in the past that Disney is planning their own streaming service, and we speculated at the time that they might pull a CBS All Access and basically launch like a Star Wars live action TV series that is exclusive to the streaming service to get people to subscribe, because that would be devious and it would make me lose my money that fast. you know, until now, they've only said that they're going to put their movies on there. But in a new statement, which Chris has covered on the site, they have confirmed their plans to do original content. Chris, what do we know?
Right. So, yeah, like you said, they're, you know, originally the plan was they're just going to take their things off Netflix. And for a while, they even said maybe they would negotiate Star Wars and Marvel. But then they eventually just said, no, we're going to take that, too. And now they're saying, basically, they're going to plan to make original TV series and films. The plan is actually at least five new films per year just for the streaming service.
Jeez. That
sizable amount.
Yeah. And they've said TV series, too, in addition to
right.
that, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. I'm imagining that they're gonna utilize their, you know, the Star Wars franchise. They're going to utilize the Marvel franchise. They're going to utilize their theme park franchises in some way. I'm excited to see what comes of this, and it's going to be interesting to see how many streaming services are going to pop up and how many you're going to dish out money from your pocket to subscribe to for all this original content that, you know, at one time was kind of like, you know, in one place in the on your cable subscription, but now is being kind of torn into all these different digital services. When the Disney streaming service comes out, do you guys plan on subscribing? Is original content like what they've been hinting at something that would get you to subscribe?
Well, I already have most of the Disney films that would be on the streaming service. So this actually offers a good incentive for me to actually subscribe, because I wasn't planning to subscribe before. So if they are good original content, I kind of foresee Disney stretching themselves thin, because they're going to be doing TV shows for, you know, the Disney Channel, for ABC, for Netflix, because they still have the Marvel series there, and the Star Wars series that are taking place on Disney XD. It's going to be a lot of content to consume and to create, so I wonder if the one that they offer on the streaming service will be any good. If they are, then, and if they pique my interest, then I might subscribe.
And Chris?
Yeah, I mean, right now my answer would be no, just because I belong to so many streaming services already. I think I belong to like five, and that just feels like way too many already. But I know the minute I start seeing like the promotional material for their new things and it starts looking cool, I'm going to be like, I need to shell out more money and actually start subscribing to this. I mean, right now the answer is no, but I'm sure it'll change.
Well, you are the king of streaming services. You cover all the streaming services on a monthly basis on slashfilm.com. So I'm sure for business reasonings, you will have to be involved when they launch. When is this? 2020?
2019.
Yeah. Moving on. Yesterday on the podcast, we talked about Tyrese had some choice words for The Rock in relation to the Fast 9 being delayed. We speculated at the time that maybe it meant that the Fast and the Furious spinoff with Dwayne Johnson was the reason. After we recorded the podcast, news actually came out that that was the reason. HD, what do we know?
So it's been confirmed that a Fast and Furious spinoff starring Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham, as their characters Luke Hobbs and Deckard Shaw will be getting a spinoff. It's going to be released in July 26, 2019, which was around the original scheduled date for Fast and Furious 9, which has now been pushed back to 2020. So all of the sort of Tyrese Gibson ramblings and behind-the-scenes trouble that we've heard with the Fast and Furious family kind of has resulted to this, which now makes a lot of sense. It's going to be written with the script is going to be written by Chris Morgan, and it will presumably deal with these two's own adventures. They portrayed a lot of chemistry during Fate of the Furious, and apparently there was originally a sort of short tag that was filmed with Hobbs and Shaw that was going to relate to them considering to go off on their own adventures away from Toretto's team. But Vin Diesel caught wind of this tag and ordered it to be cut from the film. So that was supposed to be sort of like a backdoor pilot to the spinoff, which is now happening officially. And I do see the chemistry between them. I did enjoy Deckard Shaw's appearance in Fate of the Furious, despite my reservations about him killing Han. I really hope that this spinoff will maybe deal with Han's death, because Deckard Shaw did kill him and was responsible for Sun Kang exiting the series. And maybe Han will become the villain of this spinoff, which I would welcome with open arms.
Well, how would that even be possible? Because he's dead. I mean, I guess anything's possible in the Fast and the Furious universe. They can bring people back from the dead.
Yeah, they brought plenty from the dead.
But it seems like a lot of people are pissed off at this franchise for their treatment of Han and giving Statham's character, who essentially killed him, kind of like, he's now part of the team. I think they're going to have to address this. If they want to please the hardcore fanatic fans, they're going to have to address it in some way. Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham spinoff film something you are interested in, Chris?
I'm not caught up with the series. I didn't see the last one. I saw the one before that. I mean, you know, I'll probably see it. I'll see anything, but I'm not exactly chomping at the bit for it, I'd say. But, you know, if it's entertaining enough, I'll give it a chance.
Talking about entertaining enough, a film that I enjoyed quite a bit is Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim. A sequel is coming out called Pacific Rim Uprising, which really pisses off HT. And they have released a trailer alongside their New York Comic Con panel, which hit the web today. And before we get into the mailbag, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that and get your opinions on this. Before I throw it to you, HT, I want to say that as a fan of this franchise, I don't think the first one was amazing, but it was a lot of fun, despite some problems like the main character or lead actor. This trailer, I was so excited for this sequel, and this, despite Del Toro's lack of involvement, and this trailer It fulfills all the worries I had about this sequel. It looks, at least judging by these 3 minutes, it looks kind of like a glossy Hollywood blockbuster. It seems not to have the charm, like the weird kind of charm that Del Toro brought to it. It kind of feels more Power Rangers-ish than Pacific Rim-ish. HT, what were your thoughts on this trailer?
Well, first, I want to talk about that colon. If Universal wants us to have it as just Pacific Rim Uprising with no colon, they should have that in the IMDb and Wikipedia pages, and it makes no grammatical sense. Anyways.
Yes, we've actually gotten emails from Universal correcting us on having a colon in there, and they were not too happy about that.
So I love Guillermo del Toro. He's one of my favorite directors. I think he's just a visually dazzling and visionary director. Pacific Rim Uprising wasn't exactly my cup of tea. I really enjoyed it, and I love that del Toro has this made this essentially a love letter to mecha anime and kaiju movies. Well, he literally called the monsters in his film kaiju. And you can tell that this was definitely an homage to all of the B movies and sort of 80s animated series and toy lines that came out of that whole phenomenon. Whereas the second one, it feels like a weird sort of circular return to like the toy merchandise sort of aspect of it. So whereas the first one had like a lot of charm and was definitely just about like this genre homage, Pacific Rim Uprising feels like a movie that was made to sell toys, and not in a good or bad way. I have reservations with it because of Scott Eastwood and his prominence in this movie and the trailer. I do not think he is a charismatic actor, and I don't know why Hollywood is trying to push him as the next leading man. If you remember, he was in Suicide Squad, and he was completely forgettable. I actually don't remember if he lived or died at the end. And for some reason, he is the co-lead next to John Boyega. So I like the cast other than Eastwood. I like John Boyega. I like that Rinko Kikuchi, Charlie Day, and Bern Gorman are returning. I did not like that Mako Mori was nowhere to be seen in this trailer. And I agree with Peter's assessment that this feels kind of Power Rangers-y. It's like a next generation sort of thing, all these young millennials taking over and sort of living up to this legacy from the first film. And it just felt like a sort of a hollow homage to this film that itself was an homage to a sort of subgenre of film and anime. So I don't know. It feels weird. It's like an echo effect in a way.
Yeah. And it's weird too, because they like aren't like the only way that they're distinguishing it from the original is, you know, we're seeing some fights in daylight and we're seeing a bigger kaiju that is going to take like a team battle. And those are the only selling points of this other than what, John Boyega? I don't know. Chris, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm sort of in the same boat where I love Del Toro, but I wasn't a huge fan of Pacific Rim, the first one. But I'd say pretty much everything I really liked about that first one was as a result of his involvement. So now that he's not involved with this one, it definitely does not hold my interest as much. And I mean, I like John Boyega a lot, so he's a really charismatic actor. So I'm sure he'll work overtime to make the film better than it could possibly be, but I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on this yet. If Del Toro was definitely returning and directing, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to see that. But now I'm sort of iffy on it.
Yeah. We'll have to see how this turns out. I'm still going to see this when it comes out, but I am far less excited to see it. Let's get into the mailbag, where we're going to talk more about trailers. Ed in St. Paul, Minnesota, writes in, quote, your spoiler conversation had me think of a story from the summer. I showed my 11-year-old son and 12-year-old daughter, both massive budding film geeks, the first two Terminator movies. They really liked the first, and we watched T2 a couple days later. Leading up to T2, I didn't let them watch the trailer or even read the back of the DVD packaging. I brought them in cold. They had no idea that Arnold's Terminator was going to be a good guy. When he protects John and for the first time in the shopping mall and fights the T-1000, their jaws dropped. They were shocked. My son jumped up with his hands in the air and started running around yelling, yes, yes, yes. Guess what he's going to be for Halloween this year? The twist that Arnold was a good guy was thrilling for them, and they loved it. Great experience for them. The funny thing is, I was 16 when T2 came out, And there never was a twist. Everybody knew when they saw T2 that Arnold was the good guy. I don't think a single person in 1991 walked into the theater without knowing that. Cameron does structure it so that it could be a surprise. He doesn't give it away, although if you really think about the biker bar scene, it's pretty obvious. But knowing the twist doesn't diminish the enjoyment or love of this movie. It's always been one of my favorite action movies of all time. But in terms of your conversation about coming into a movie pure, this is an example of some that would really benefit the joy that came from it. Knowing the twist that wasn't really a twist didn't ruin the movie for anyone, but man, it did add for the experience of my kids. Can you think of any other twists that everybody knew about going in where the movie could be benefited from viewers going in cold? Okay, that was a long email, and I apologize if I stumbled a little bit over it. Terminator is one of the biggest examples of that, and that's something I've used many times. It's almost as if the script was written for that inciting incident of, Arnold protecting John Connor to be a surprise. But of course, you cannot sell that movie. You cannot have a plot synopsis for that movie without revealing that that the T-800 is the good guy, right? Like, there's no way to market that movie to people without ruining that. Let's get to this question. What movies could have benefited from viewers going in blind? I guess he's basically asking what films did the trailers totally ruin twists? And the first two that come to my mind are also Terminator films, and that would be Terminator Salvation and Terminator Genesis. Terminator Salvation, and by the way, we should probably preface this that we're going to talk about films and their twists. So if you are worried about getting spoiled on a twist reveal that was in a trailer, turn off now. Yes. So Terminator Salvation had Sam Worthington as one of the main characters. He's kind of like the eyes and ears of the audience going into this film. And it turns out that he is a Terminator. This is a reveal in the film. It's not even a reveal in the first act like it is Terminator 2. It's a reveal much further, I believe, right? And this is something that was all in on the marketing. But I think even worse than that is Terminator Genesis, that revealed that Jason Clarke, who plays John Connor, is a Terminator. Like, how cool would that have twist been if they had, kept that for the movie? But it's not something early on in the film. This is like a mid-act twist they spoil. I know that we just went through two podcasts of me defending movies not being able to be spoiled, and I love trailers, but there are some really bad trailers. There are some good trailers, and they're the bad trailers, and we're talking about the bad trailers today. So HT, what are some examples that you can think of?
So my first example is The Island, which is directed by Michael Bay and stars Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor. And it starts with the premise that it's sort of like this futuristic utopia where people are given a lottery so that they can go off and enjoy life on this mystical island. But about 30 seconds into the trailer, I think not even a minute in, Ewan McGregor screams, "There is no island," and that spoils sort of the illusion of the beginning of the film.
That is a pretty big spoiler for that film. Chris, how about you?
So I don't even really like this movie exactly, but I remember the trailers for the film What Lies Beneath, the Robert Zemeckis movie that was sort of like a homage to Hitchcock. It had Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer in it. That trailer gives away multiple twists. Basically, the whole thing of that movie is Michelle Pfeiffer thinks her house is haunted, and then it turns out Harrison Ford's character, who plays her husband, had an affair, and he also killed his mistress and all this stuff. But all that stuff is supposed to be big, shocking twists, but it's pretty much all given away in the trailer of the film. Literally every single twist, even the twist that Harrison Ford is a murderer, is in the trailer, which is presented as this big, shocking thing that comes out at like the very end of the movie. So that, for me, is probably one of the most egregious examples.
Another one on my list is another Robert Zemeckis film, actually. He filmed this after that film. It's a film called Castaway, starring Tom Hanks. Obviously Tom Hanks is stranded on a deserted island. And in the trailer, I want to say, how far into the movie does he get off the island? Does anybody recall?
It's after like an hour and a half,
Two-thirds of the way through, yeah.
It's a pretty late development. And it's not like it's only he's off the island for a couple scenes. It's a significant portion of the film. But I think it's kind of a spoiler to reveal that he makes it out alive, even though we know the hero is probably going to make it out alive. The trailer completely spoils that twist. It completely spoils the whole storyline of, what happens when he comes back to reality, which I know is, I guess I understand why they're using that selling point, but I remember it was disappointing at the time. HG, do you have any others?
My second choice is Speed, the 90s action film starring Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. So this was actually kind of a blink and you'll miss it spoiler, but it does get spoiled during the trailer that the bus explodes at the airport and the hostages on the bus make it out safely, because you can see the hostages reacting to the bus exploding during that scene. So it kind of takes away some of the tension from the movie where you're suspended for most of the film, thinking like, are they going to make it? Are they going to make it off the bus? But, they do.
Why would they put that in the trailer? I guess, they need it's an explosion. It's
they need
some
a lot
action.
Of explosions.
Yeah. Chris, how about your last pick?
Right. So my last pick is From Dusk Till Dawn, which is I think it was the 90s also. It's this horror film directed by Robert Rodriguez and written by Quentin Tarantino. And most of the first half of that film, you don't actually realize it's a horror film. It looks like it's going to be just another like Tarantino-esque crime movie. And then they get to a strip club, and then it turns out it's actually a vampire movie. And I actually remember reading, I can't remember who it was, but it was either Tarantino or Rodriguez wished the marketing didn't give this away. Like they were hoping the marketing would just present it as a crime film so that people would go to see that and then they'd be shocked to discover, oh, this is actually a horror movie. But the marketing department didn't go for that. So all the trailers basically just give away the fact that there's this twist involving vampires. But I feel like if they hadn't put that twist, it would have made the if it wasn't in the trailers, it would have made the film even more memorable because you wouldn't be expecting it.
I don't think there's any way to sell that movie without revealing that twist, though.
Probably not. I mean, now you probably could because you could be like, oh, it's the new Quentin Tarantino movie. But I guess then he wasn't quite the name he is now.
Yeah. Another recent example, on the other hand of things, is Passengers, where they kind of kept the inciting incident out of the trailers, which is the fact that Chris Pratt, awakens Jennifer Lawrence on this space shuttle, the space cruise or whatever it's called. And they kept that out of trailers because they didn't want that to scare people away. They didn't want, but it's not something that's kept in, from us, the audience, late into the film. They were trying to keep a story point out of the trailers. And I think it backfired on them huge because people went in thinking that this was going to be kind of like this, romantic comedy on a spaceship. And do you know what I mean? And then it was kind of creepy that Chris Pratt was basically dooming someone he didn't know to, you know, death, basically, on the spaceship by waking them up from cryo sleep. So I think that backfired huge. So that's one reason why I think studios don't want to be deceptive, because, you know, that can backfire like that. Another recent example I wanted to mention is 10 Cloverfield Lane, where they kind of show, well, they show two things. They show that she escapes the house, right? She's running outside of the house, and that's in, I think, at least the second trailer, if not the first. And in the trailers, they kind of show that there's something sci-fi going on. We don't know what. In the Japanese marketing, we know what, and we see what. But in the American marketing, like, I think they gave away too much. I think going into it, already having a title with the Cloverfield brand on it, we could have known that, like, oh, there's going to be some kind of interesting sci-fi twist to this. But I think the studio, Paramount, on two different levels, they don't want audiences going in thinking they're getting this contained thriller and feeling betrayed when it becomes something else. But also, you know, a sci-fi kind of alien kind of thing is probably going to get more audiences to come buy tickets than a contained thriller. So, you know, it's twofold. And I also, one last thing, not to drag this out too much, but Darren Aronofsky's Noah, I know for a fact they screened that for a lot of church folk before the movie came out. And this movie kind of like has this fantasy take on the Bible story of Noah and involves these like big rock monsters and all this stuff. The people from the churches that saw this film early and gave Paramount feedback did not like, you know, that aspect of it. So Paramount kept all of that out of the trailers, kept, you know, the rock monsters. You know, they wanted the people that go to church to go see this movie. And when those people did go see the movie, they kind of felt betrayed because it wasn't what they were selling. It was kind of a fantasy take on it. And interestingly enough, I think more audiences that like genre films probably would have went and saw this biblical story if they had known that it kind of has like this Lord of the Rings style kind of take on it, on the story. Can you guys think of any other examples of audiences feeling betrayed by the marketing?
I mean, I don't know how they'll feel about it yet. I won't give anything away, but I will say, having seen Blade Runner 2049, the trailers do a very good job of not giving anything away. I would, like, when I saw the film, I was actually shocked at how little I knew about the movie, and the movie is just filled with things that a lot of people are not going to be expecting. And I actually have a feeling that might backfire just because it's a little different, and I have a feeling audiences aren't going to be prepared for that, but I don't know.
I think your point applies a lot to a lot of horror films or movies that are mismarketed as horror films. So Shutter Island, for example, is sort of a psychological thriller, and it gets marketed as a standard horror film. And I know a lot of people were disappointed in that when they first went to see it. It's a lot more interesting than the trailers imply.
Yeah, no, I agree with that case as well. You know, as long as studios want to get people to go put their hard-earned money at the box office and see these movies, they're going to put whatever they can in the trailer to try to get you to, you know, exchange that money. And I do like to think that there are a lot of movies out there that have good marketing that stands alone as an art. You look at the Dunkirk marketing, you look at the Blade Runner marketing, you look at even the marketing campaigns for The Force Awakens was brilliant and didn't reveal too much about the film. It is a shame that, you know, every so often, or probably more often than not, that studios do put stuff in there to spoil big reveals and big twists. But I think those were our top ones that we can remember. HD, where can we find more of your work online?
You can find me at slashfilm.com. I'm on Twitter at htranbui, and I have a podcast, the Millennial Falcon Podcast, on iTunes.
Chris, how about you?
I'm also on Twitter, cevangelista413. I'm on slashfilm, obviously. I have something up this week at Nerdist on the Child's Play franchise, so go look for that.
Very cool. And obviously, to submit questions to the mailbag, you can email them to peter@slashfilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention on there, like we did with Ed from St. Paul, Minnesota. You can listen to Slash Film Daily, published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please go to iTunes, give us a review, give us a rating. That helps us out quite a bit. Also, you know, tell your friends. And thank you for listening.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.